like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank, word to Chris Hanks. Before to put it all together, this is big thanks. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This is just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, well homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016, like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general from the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never going hard as ever. The results match the effort.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Shrimp Tank, brought to you right here at the Business Radio X Network. And every week on the Shrimp Tank, we come to you live 11:30 to 12:30 here on Thursdays, and we interview the brightest and best business owners in the state of Georgia. We happen to have one today that sold a big business, Jim McCarter. We'll get to him in just a minute. And what we do in here, when we talk to our CEOs, we talk about the do's and don'ts of starting, growing, and running a very, very successful business. We also get to bring on some kids here from time to time that pitch their businesses, and we find out whether or not their business will swim or it'll sink in the tank. As every week, I'm joined here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who is the executive director and founder of the now Shore. I think it's official.
Center it is Front. Official.
Is it official?
The big naming ceremony was Saturday, which you were not there, Ted.
I was not highly disappointed.
I was not there. But you were too busy. You know,
was I named at the naming ceremony for not being there or no?
No, you weren't.
I wasn't.
You weren't named. No honorable mention. But
and I
you
said last
there.
Time, I was curious for those that didn't hear the show last week, how does one actually get naming rights? Is it purely around how much money that you're willing to give?
How much money are you willing to give, Ted?
Yeah. Well, I would give a lot of money. I was thinking about this is that and the prolific rise of KSU football, which I know is growing each and every year.
Owl Nation.
What would it take for me to get my naming rights? I could care less about my company. I just want me on the side.
you want
me on the side of the plastic cups. What would it take?
So the
for
plastic
me to
cups?
Get?
Oh, at this level, I think you can score a good deal. You want? Yeah, I can probably negotiate.
If
that
I'm somewhere under the 25,000 level, I just want my name on there,
yeah.
And I'll put my phone number and tell only the good-looking people to call me. That's all. I want to do that on the side of the cups.
Is that what you want to do that? So yeah.
I start with side of the cups, and then when I have enough money, I'll put myself on the side of the building. That's how it works. You know, most people don't realize this before we get into some of the stuff in the shrimp tank, that sometimes it's more blessed to give than to receive, because the people that give money, there are also major tax deductions when people set up these gifting programs with schools, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because part of the gift that we receive is charitable gift trust, I believe. And so, yeah, there's definitely some advantages to that.
Schools love charitable gift trust, right?
But where can people go with solid financial advice like that? Where could individuals go to get advice on such things?
Call me, get a cup of coffee. we'll talk about this kind of stuff. Look, you got to decide who you want to pay. Do you want to pay Kennesaw State or pay the government? It doesn't seem like much of a choice if you've been watching all this election stuff on TV. Now, what is going on at Kennesaw State? I understand today our guest, Jim McCarter, is actually a finalist in something that's going on at Kennesaw State.
Yeah, so he was a mentor in our big KSU Top 100. So absolutely. The person that you mentored came in
second.
Well, top three. So we didn't have an official second, but yeah.
I think she was 1A, 1B.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
So she was
like
great.
That.
No, did
That's
a great job. But Lee
Chris,
Heisman.
This is how a winner talks, by the way.
Yeah,
losers say this one finished first and mine finished second. Jim McCarter says, well, they finished 1B. I like
1B,
that. 1B,
yeah.
It's not really
nice.
2. It's 1B.
Yeah, especially because the person he lost to is
he beat,
actually, but he outpaced you, Ted, and Lee Heisman over there, who definitely mentored the winner of KSU.
Well, it's
Top
not
100.
Hard to outpace me. For crying out loud, I had Lyle Lovett, you know, who's giving me an app or something like that. I didn't know what it was.
But you know, we are gearing up for our season number 2. So, you know, let the competition begin again. Let's
now,
see
we've also got
it.
With us, we've got Rusty back this week, which is great. We like to bring on kids from Kennesaw State that are the budding future entrepreneurs. So, Rusty, we're glad to have you on today.
Great to be back.
And what's your entrepreneurial tip for the young entrepreneurs out there?
Never give up.
I like that.
Yeah,
never,
awesome.
Never give up. I like that. Now, I want to tell you one thing before we get to our guest, Jim McCarter, today, who sold a big business, DocuTape, knows a lot. He's a serial entrepreneur, knows a ton about the world of being an entrepreneur. So I want to get to this really. It's going to be a great interview today. But I was at a conference, Chris, for 5 days last week learning more and more about marketing. And I saw a very, very successful entrepreneur. This guy's name is Noah Kagan. He started a company called Sumo Me, well over $100 million right now, which is a pretty significant business. For those that started a business, when you get to a million, that's a hurdle. You get to 10 million, it's a pretty decent hurdle. You get to 100 million, basically he spent half the speech saying, let me just tell you something in advance. I'm rich. And he said this not to really be derogatory, although he said in the beginning of the speech, let me just say that when I tell you that I'm rich, I guess that could come off sounding kind of arrogant, but yeah, I'm rich. So if it sounds arrogant, it's just because I have a lot more money than all of you that are sitting here right now. And he proceeded to show on the screen his bank account, which his personal bank account had $29 million in his checking account, and it had $90 million in the company account. And then I thought, you are rich. Yes, that's. Wow. I think that classifies as having a few shekels there.
Probably don't need overdraft protection. Probably not checking account.
Probably not. I don't think. Here's the interesting thing for the entrepreneurs, and I want to give this to Professor Hanks today because I think it's going to be a great thing for a future class. So a lot of people out there want to make $1 million, and this may be $1 million that you want to make in your pocket, or you have a company that you want to get to $1 million. And he basically said, here's the breakdown. This is really interesting. Number one, sell $2,740 of stuff every day. If you can just do $2,740 of sales every day, I don't care if you sell toys or you sell cars or you sell services, just do $2,740 of sales and you're going to gross $1 million. Okay. So it's interesting because a lot of owners break their goals down annually and sometimes people do it quarterly. Better ones do it monthly, but people that have daily goals tend to do better.
Yep. That's true.
He's in the email business though, Chris. And what he said is that another way to do it is to collect 1,000 emails and ask them for $1,000. So collect 1,000 emails and save them and give me $1,000. Now he said that's going to be harder, you know, but that's one of those things that it's going to be harder. He said, or you could collect 1,000,000 emails and ask everybody for $1. And he said, because Sumo Me has 13 million emails, we have to ask people for like, you know, 5 cents. And we, you know, we can get to that kind of revenue. He said the other way to do it is to buy lotto tickets. So he proceeded to hand out lotto tickets to everybody. Of course, some guy yelled, I want a free ticket. And he's like, I have $100 million. and then he said the other way to do it, which, you know, really, if you're desperate for it, is just to find somebody you know that has $1 million and just beat them up and rob them. Find them, tackle them, and take their $1 million. That's one way to do it. Although I think that might not work out to be the best. The question is, whatever business you're running, how can you generate $2,740 of revenue every day?
Yeah. I like that thought process because it makes things more tangible, right? $1 million seems like so out of reach. It's not concrete. Like, you know, and when it's not concrete to me, it doesn't become real to me. Kind of like how many saturated grams of fat are in something. I don't know what that means, but you tell me, hey, you know what? This contains more artery clogging fat than Waffle House or something like that. Or like the deficit, trillions of dollars. I don't know what that means, but give me an analogy or something I can focus on. When you break down something that large into daily tangible goals, you know, success or failure should be measured daily, you know, and that way we can keep score.
It's very, very interesting stuff. You're listening to The Shrimp Tank right here on the Business Radio X Networks. I'm your co-host, Ted Jenkin. Sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who's the executive director and founder for the now officially Shore Center of Entrepreneurship. We've got Rusty in from KSU. And we're joined by our special guest today, Jim McCarter. Jim is a serial entrepreneur. I know that he's a philanthropist. He does a lot of giving back into the community, sold a very big business called DocuTape. And I wanted to start off with this DocuTeam. Why did I say DocuTape?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Well, hell, somebody go to GoDaddy now and give me DocuTape if it's not taken already. I'll sell that thing down the road. But DocuTeam, and sold it to a very big business, Sharp, which we'll talk about how that might have happened down the road. But I wanted to start off because you've been an entrepreneur for a long time. Do you believe that entrepreneurs are born or are they built?
You know, you think about that, and I've thought about it hard, long and hard, and I guess it's both. I think there are some that are born with chutzpah, with some talent.
I love that.
You know, guts, guile. But, you know, there's other things that you've got to add to that. So I think it's a combination of both. You know, Tom Brady was born probably to be a professional quarterback. I don't know that I was born to be an entrepreneur, but I think you're born with certain skills that say maybe you're willing to take risks and to be gutsy about some of the things you believe in. But I think there's probably a combination of both.
So what made you originally want to be an entrepreneur?
Well, I think it's, you know, having worked in the, you know, in my industry and working for other companies, I realized that I'd built large organizations for others, and I felt like that I could do it for myself. And I felt like if I didn't do it at a certain time, I remember telling my father, you know, I'm going to start my own company. He goes, what? You would leave being president of Icon to start your own company at your age? And I said, Dad, if I don't do it now, I'll never do it. So I think it's one of those that you kind of get to the point where you realize you might have the ability. And I said to him, the worst thing is I'll go back and get a job someplace. It's not like I'm going to fail miserably. So if you fail slightly, you still, you know, can make some good money. And if it doesn't work out well, then you can go back and work for somebody.
Hey, you're listening to the Shrimp Tank right here on the Business Radio X Networks. We're sitting here with Jim McCarter today, who sold DocuTeam to Sharp, a successful entrepreneur. And I'm wondering, as you talk about this transition of moving from a very stable corporate job into this world of entrepreneurship, how did you teach yourself to not be afraid to fail? Like, how did you get that mentality? Because I think a lot of people don't get into entrepreneurship sometimes because, you know, they want to succeed, but they are afraid to fail.
It was my biggest motivation was not to fail, especially since my father at the time was still alive and, you know, him questioning whether it was going to work or not and why I would do it and so forth. So it was a great motivation. But I think what happens is through the culture of working for others, you build up confidence in your own abilities and you build up confidence in the fact that you can build a team that would follow you and probably you could motivate them to do some of the things that maybe they couldn't do individually. So you see a lot of things that start to develop working for somebody else. You go, why not do it for myself? And why not build a team? Why not build an organization that can do this and can be a lot more maneuverable than the competitors are?
Now, you mentioned earlier that you believe that people are born with certain
skills. Damn, Rusty, I love your voice, man. I'll tell you what, every time he says it, it doesn't get old for me. It doesn't get old for me, Hanks. Yeah.
Would you like to sleep on a mattress made of that voice?
Oh, my.
Put your head down now.
Good night. But you mentioned earlier that you believe that people are born with certain skills to become an entrepreneur. So do you believe that there's a specific pattern or formula to become a successful entrepreneur?
You know, I don't know. They say that your personality is developed in the first 6 months to a year of your life. Excuse me. And I think so your personality dictates a lot of things that you do. But I think there are certain innate things that you get probably from your parents, you know, DNA and so forth. Seeing how your parents do things and seeing how my father worked, you know, for other companies and so forth. But I don't know how much of that's actually built into your initial DNA. I can't separate those two out. I just think it's a combination of both.
So when you started your business, were there any sort of huge obstacles? Or I'm just wondering, like, what was your biggest challenge, you know, particularly in the beginning of your venture?
Well, the biggest obstacle was I left Icon. I was a former president and we took the manufacturer with us, Sharp, and we got sued handsomely by Sharp in the beginning. And so clearly the biggest obstacle was to fight them. And so we went out and got the best attorney who happens to be one of my best friends now. And he fought them and three attorneys later for Icon, we won. But you know, when you win, you don't really win because you spend a lot of money defending yourself.
Yep.
So the biggest, once we got past the hurdle of defending the lawsuit, then it was building the team, you know, saying, okay, here's what we have, you know, the knowns, and here's the basic team, the executive team, and the people that we don't have that can add extra expertise to them, where are we going to get those? So then we'd have to go out and look for the people that would add to that team. And that's what we did initially.
You know, there's not every entrepreneur is going to have the ability to sell their business. You know, some people will cash flow it forever. Some people will end up bringing in family members. But you had this unique opportunity to sell a really sizable business to a more sizable company. As you reflect back on the sale that you made, is there anything in hindsight that you would do differently in selling out the company now that you went through that process? Because for some people, it only happens once, you know. Is there anything you would do differently?
Yeah, it's a good question because I think what happened was we knew in advance that we needed to set the company up for sale and we went out and got some suitors. And then we went back to Sharp, who was our primary manufacturer, and said, here's what others are willing to pay. here's what it's going to take for us to do a deal with you. And it was added, and there was a lot of money added to it to get to that stage. But, you know, I think what happened was we just had to say, we know that at some point in time we're going to sell this. And we had some manufacturers that were interested in us. But I think the one thing we would do differently, I would do differently today, is I would have added a lot more purchase of companies into DocuTeam before we sold. We never bought another company and rolled it in. And that's how our business works a lot, is people buy businesses and they'll do a roll-up. I wish we'd have done that. I think there were several companies in Atlanta that, hindsight, we probably could have, should have bought and made the company bigger, better, more successful.
And would that have created a higher multiple when you sold it? You know, even if you had leveraged out some debt, that would have created more of a multiple at sale?
It would have. Hindsight, it would have, because we didn't know necessarily for sure, because it was primarily a formula of revenue and profit and number of machines in field and that kind of thing, because it was a copier company. You know, when I look at that, well, we certainly could have sold for a lot more money. And even with a little more debt, we ended up selling for dollar on revenue. So with that being the case, we would have certainly sold for more money.
So what was your most satisfying moment in your business? Was it the actual selling of it?
No, I think it was seeing the growth of the management team. Now, anybody that says, it's like you ask an athlete why they are glad they signed a new contract, and they'll tell you all the reasons, but it has nothing to do with money. A lot of it's money. So make no mistake about it. A big portion of it was money. And my wife would tell you a lot of her portion of the equation was money. But I think the pride that you have is in selling, and you seeing the safety net that our employees would have working for a company that we had worked with for a long period of time. And not only that, but seeing them develop over time into executives and top sales reps and great CFOs and all that, seeing that management team come together and form a nucleus of a pretty good company that multiple companies wanted to buy.
Rusty, if you'd asked me that question, I would have said getting drunk at my holiday party and singing a great karaoke song. That would have been the highlight so far for me. But money does sound a lot better when you hear it like that on the radio. It does sound a lot better. We're going to take a break from our sponsors. When we come back with Jim McCarter, former owner of DocuTeam, sold a big business out to Sharp. We're going to talk a little bit more about entrepreneurialism and life, and talk about, should you give your business to your kids? You're listening to The Shrimp Tank right here on the Business Radio X Network.
Does it seem like the more money you make, the more money seems to slip through your fingers? Why is it that you make six figures, but seem to have six figures worth of bills? Now it's time to get a plan. Set up time today to start your 21-day budget cleanse. Go to OxygenFinancial.net to schedule a complimentary meeting now. Go to OxygenFinancial.net to get started today. Securities offered through Kestra Investment Services, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Kestra Advisory Services, LLC, an affiliate of Kestra Investment Services. Oxygen is not affiliated with Kestra.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Shrimp Tank, coming to you live every Thursday from 11:30 to 12:30. Thanks for joining us during lunchtime. Hopefully you get a lot of great value today that you can take away from our very successful entrepreneurs across the state of Georgia. We're in the studios here at the Business Radio X Network, joined today by Jim McCarter, who had sold DocuTeam, has done a ton of stuff at Kennesaw State University, and really knows a lot about entrepreneurship. Every week, I'm obviously joined here by my co-host, Chris Hanks, who is the executive director and founder at the Now Shore Center for Entrepreneurship. We've got Rusty in today, skipping class, and you're not skipping class, sorry, skipping class and joining us here on our broadcast. Rusty, you're not skipping class today, are you?
I only skipped one.
Now I've got an important question in here for Rusty, because I'm curious about this since I'm older. And so the thing is that at the vending machines, right? I see now that, like, they have regular vending machines and supposedly these healthy vending machines. Choice of Kids, they don't really go to these healthy vending machines, do they?
No, it's a ghost town.
It's a ghost town. See, that's a crappy business. They have these things in the back of magazines to buy these healthy snacks. Nobody wants to eat a packet of pistachios while they're walking around campus, right? It's
that's
still
right.
The junk that they want, right? They want junk.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm actually, with Rusty skipping class, just remember, Rusty, that a single conversation with a wise man is worth a month's study in books.
That's what I'm going to tell my professor.
God, I didn't know that.
That's a Chinese proverb.
I was saying, Hanks teaches Confucius while he's teaching the other stuff inside of the entrepreneurial school.
Exactly.
Man who fly upside down or something like that.
Exactly.
Well, we get to our second segment here, always on the Shrimp Tank. You can hear an entire replay of the broadcast today if you didn't catch Jim's first segment on shrimptankpodcast.com. By the way, if you go there and you sign up on the email list, you will get some great stuff in terms of newsletters, entrepreneurial ideas, replays of all the videos of the successful entrepreneurs that we have here on the Shrimp Tank. It's great stuff. And if you like hearing the show today and you want to hear it in your car, not hear this terrestrial radio stuff, you can always go to iTunes and download us. Just download Shrimp Tank and you can hear all of our broadcasts or catch up over the weekend. Getting information today from guys like Jim McCarter are things that can change your future and your business. And we know, as we say every week here on the Shrimp Tank, who's going to create the future jobs here in America? Believe me, it's not these two knuckleheads. It's going to be the small business owners of America on our backs that we're going to hire employees and create jobs, not the Fortune 500 companies. So we have a second segment here that we call Hot or Not. And I was curious as I broke out into the break there and I was talking about this. Is it a good idea for somebody who's an entrepreneur to give the business to their kids? Is that a hot or is it a not?
I don't know. I don't know if you hate to hear somebody say hot or not. I would say it's probably hot as much as possible that you can either give it to them if they're ready for it. I think if they're just entitled and they've never worked in it and earned their right to be president or owner or whatever, I think it's a not. But I think if they've worked their way up through the company and understood how to run it and people see them as the next president or next entrepreneur to run it, then I think it's a different thing.
Well, you just mentioned that you just recently sold your company and that was a major sale, and sales is important in just about any industry. Now, there's a lot of talk that dressing for success and all that is actually going out the window. Hot or not, do you believe that?
I don't believe it. And if you ask my company, they still wear suits and ties and now less ties, especially in the summer. But I think, you know, if you wear a sports coat, they wear a sports coat, at least sports coat slacks. Because I think when they compete against Xerox or Icon or some of the major manufacturers, a lot of times IBM, Xerox, all of them are dressed to the nines. I still think it's very important, especially on the first call. I think once they build a relationship with somebody, I think sometimes that can change a bit. But I think in terms of you can't make a good first impression the second, third, fourth time around. So I think initially you want to look the role. Shoes shined, nice starched shirt, good sports coat or suit. I think that goes a long way still today.
Rusty Lee Heisman thought that went out of the window like 7 years ago. He chucked that right out the window. When you work at Savant, it says in the manual, because I read this thing, it said white t-shirt and cargo shorts. That is the desired attire at Savant. So it's important to note that during the show.
I'm curious, since you had a large exit, having employees participate in an exit, hot or not?
Oh, I think, first of all, they almost have to participate. You know, by design, they're going to participate. I think it was great. One of my goals was to make sure that it was a safe haven for them because we had several suitors that wanted to buy us. First of all, Sharp was the highest bidder, so that was number one. But secondly, is because they had a good relationship. They knew the Sharp product line. They knew a little bit about the company and how they would run the company. And so I think it probably helped them with some of the angst they might have on a purchase, because when there's that big a change in an organization, people get very frightened about what does it mean for me? I know what it might mean for Jim McCarter and maybe the executive staff. What's it going to mean for me?
Hey, we're sitting here with Jim McCarter, who sold DocuTeam to Sharp. He's a serial entrepreneur, has a ton of business experience. We're fortunate to have him today on Business Radio X. You can always hear a replay of the entire broadcast on shrimptankpodcast.com. One of the things that we have asked almost every business owner that comes on this show, and I'm interested to hear what you have to say, considering that you've got tons of corporate experience, you've got entrepreneurial experience. Should a start-out business owner build a business plan, or do you basically just bootstrap it and get going?
No, you have to have a business plan, I think. First of all, nobody's going to fund it. And unless you're independently wealthy, you're going to have to put together a business plan for the banks or whoever is going to invest in it. So you have to have a business plan. And it's like anything else. You need to have a roadmap. if you don't have a business plan and you just start it and you bootstrap it and you say, okay, well, first day, here's what we're going to do, and people think that you're winging it, then they have a tendency not to buy into your program near as well as they do if they feel like you've got a well thought out business plan. And
but it doesn't have to be a 40-page document, right? It doesn't be enough to articulate where you're going, or does it have to be a 40-page document?
Well, it really depends on the audience. For the banks, it may not be a 40-page, but it's certainly you got to answer the major things: is when are you going to break even? When are you going to make money? What's your overall goal? What's the size of the company you want to be? You know, when are you going to have positive cash flow? Right. All the things that they want to see in a business plan. But I don't think it does. I don't think you have to invent it and have it be War and Peace Volume 1 and 2,
right,
where it's huge. I don't think you have to do that because, first of all, nobody's going to read that. And you can't articulate that if you're talking to a large group of employees.
Do the banks even take any risks today? I think basically the way that it works, it's like, we'll loan you money. You just got to keep all your cash with us on a personal guarantee. And by the way, like your firstborn child, right?
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty true.
So some people say, you know, go get the corporate experience first, then start your business. Some people say, you know, that's like learning baseball, then trying to go play football. So is it hot or not? Corporate experience first?
Well, I would have to say, you know, you have a tendency to go with your own experiences. And I had a lot of corporate experience. So I learned the things to do and the things not to do from major corporations. And I realized that I didn't want to work for a major corporation because you're a number. When I was working for Xerox years ago, I was EOAW. I mean, that was me. I wasn't Jim McCarter. I was EOAW. And I think after a while, you kind of realize that. So I think it's very important if you can at least get some experience of seeing how businesses are run and how entrepreneurs employ people and how they motivate them and all that. I think it can do nothing but help.
Hey, you're listening to The Shrimp Tank right here on the Business Radio X Networks. We're going to take a short break from our sponsors. We've got to be able to do that during the show. When we come back, we're going to get to have some fun with Jim McCarter and talk about the plead the fifth section. I think I'm wondering today, can Chris Hanks get Jim McCarter to plead the fifth? That's what we're going to find out right after the break from our sponsors right here on The Shrimp Tank.
You know, Ted, in business, it's either time or money. How much does your business lose if your network is down for a day? How much time does your employees waste trying to fix computer issues? At Savant, we have the experts that work on your network to simply make your company run more efficiently. Macs, PCs, mobile solutions, no problem. Savant's battery life never ends. Call 770-438-6240 now.
You know, I tried to get Savant to change their slogan out to "Ribbed for Your Pleasure," but the owner would not let me do it. So welcome back to the Shrimp Tank here for our Plead the Fifth segment. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who's the executive director and founder of the Shore Center for Entrepreneurship. Don't I make you laugh every show? Isn't this part of your Thursdays here? It's part radio show, part therapy. Isn't that how it works?
That's how it works, Ed. Thank you.
I make the jokes. You make the 80s references. That's how it goes on.
That's
here.
How it goes.
Don't exactly. You have one for me today?
Yes,
or you don't?
Right.
No. One quote from Rocky? Do you know if that's your favorite movie? Don't you have one?
Yeah. Oh, well,
one, what's the best quote from
Rocky? Tons of lessons from Rocky. I don't know. I like Breathe Lightning and Crap Thunder. That's basically, that's pretty awesome, right? That's great.
Now,
how
did
Mickey
I hear,
says, I'm going to make you, you know, that's what I'm trying to do.
Did we
Rusty.
Hear Rusty's favorite movie on here? Did we get that in the beginning?
Nope, but my favorite is Limitless.
Limitless. Now, do you have a quote from Limitless or?
No.
Never heard of that movie. I don't even know about it.
It's the one where the guy takes the pill and suddenly has a 5-digit IQ.
Okay.
Wow.
First of all,
it's like a day in Chris Hanks' class.
Honestly.
is that how you survived my class, Rusty? So is there something you want to share?
How I survived your class? Just know who you're talking to and understand what you're saying is gold.
All right.
All right. We get to our third and final segment today as we do our Plead the Fifth. And we're fortunate to have Jim McCarter on today. You got to hear his entire broadcast. Go to shrimptankpodcast.com. You'll also watch later the post-show wrap-up that we do. This is the kind of information that you need to get. Somebody that's not only started a business, but grew the business, but actually sold it. And given the shirt that he has on today, I'm going to say he sold it for a lot of money because I know you could tell by somebody's shirt how well they've done. What does that say about Mr. Heisman today? I don't know. But
this is a tearaway jersey, by the way.
So is it a good idea in the plead the fifth to marry an entrepreneur? Is this good advice to give to somebody?
Listen closely, Rusty.
I think it's great advice for my wife. I'm not sure how good advice it is for everybody. I think it's great because I think it's one of those things that, first of all, most entrepreneurs are workaholics. So you got to realize getting into it that you're going to marry a ghost in the first so many years till the company grows and get some capital and get some profits and so forth, success behind it. So, but I think, yes, I think overall, I think you'd want to marry because they're driven.
Is it hard to be in a public somewhere or grocery shopping and then your wife, like you take a phone call, you completely interrupt the day, you know, how do you recommend families deal with that? Because you are a ghost for a handful of years.
Well, my wife used to say to me, did you see that I texted you 4 times this morning and I tried to get a hold of you 3 times? I said, honey, did you realize I had, you know, these meetings, those meetings and all that? And she goes, well, what's more important? And I said, you are. And she said, but you didn't have your cell phone with you. So you have to deal with that. you certainly have to deal with that. And, one of the things that I said when I left the company was, if I ever got a big head, all I had to do was go home and have my kids and my wife, you know, kind of bust your chops because they can do the best at that. You could come away feeling very good about what you've built and who you are and what you've done and all that. But, you know, the ship gets righted by your family very quickly.
So what was your greatest failure and what did you learn from it?
Wow. There's no question about that one. We felt like we had found the formula for Coca-Cola, and we felt like we could duplicate wherever we went with our imaging company. And we went into Jacksonville, Florida. Neither one of my partner and I didn't move there. And we found out very quickly that, you can't manage something from afar. And so we went into Jacksonville and felt like, hey, this is a marketplace that needs leadership and doesn't have any in our industry. And we failed miserably. And I always kid my wife because we have a refrigerator in our lake house that I said, you know, that refrigerator cost us about $2 million because that's all I got out of that company.
And ironically, that's not cool.
See, I had to do that for you, Chad. I had to do it. I'm sorry.
We got to go drinking sometime, you know?
Right. But I got to tell you, Ted, you said something about this is very therapeutic for me this morning. So I want you to know this is therapeutic. Not only talking, but hearing you guys talk is therapeutic. I feel very good about myself.
What few words describe you at your best and what few words describe you at your worst?
Well, I'll start out with the worst. I wasn't born with patience and I didn't get any over the many, many years I've been alive or ran a business. So I don't have patience. I think probably my best attribute is having people want to follow me and having people buy into whatever the overall goal of the company is. And so I think the big picture is that, and the small picture is that, you know, sometimes you can get too big for your britches and feel like you can go anywhere and do anything. And sometimes you get right-sized.
So do you have a sharp copier at the house?
I do. But more importantly, and I know this because I went to Xfinity the other day, we have 20 sharp TVs in our house. And I had no idea until I had no idea.
20 TVs in your house? How do you have 20 TVs
in the house? Well, I'm not saying that braggadociously. I'm just saying we got 2 or 3 in the bathrooms. You know, every room has a TV. You never know if you're going to have a sporting event or you need therapy. You know,
he's got the ones in there, Hanks, that we aspire to, where after he's out of the shower, he presses what looks like to be the mirror. Behind it is really a TV in the morning because he gets to watch ESPN right there. People like us have to go make our coffee, get our cereal, find whatever TV where it is, and then start. I see that 20 TVs.
Now I have something to aim for.
Shouldn't have said that. I should have said that right. Without Rusty, the number.
21.
21.
21 within 10 years. 21. That's your goal.
Darn right.
Rusty, yes. I'll buy your first today, your second. You have one now?
Hey, yes,
Rusty,
I do.
I'll pick up the second for you today.
If I can get you the sharp discount, you get them a lot quicker.
Yes, you're right. I'm not arguing with that. Goodness.
All right, you got one more, Rusty?
Oh, yes.
We'll do one more.
All right. What annoys you the most about your clients?
Well, I think when you ask them a question, they don't answer it honestly, because one of the things we had to do in the beginning was prove to people that you want to leave Xerox or somebody else and come to us. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they would say, Jim, I believe in you. You've managed our account from Icon. I believe in you, but I don't want to be the first. And I said, well, let me tell you why I think you want to be the first. Nobody's ever going to have more leverage than you are, because if I don't take care of you, I don't get the 10th, the 100th, the 10,000th customer. So I've got to take care of you. So when we're actually asking a customer what they have today, and when they don't give you the facts, and then you get into it and you realize that they haven't been so honest with you, then you realize that maybe you didn't build up a good relationship with them in the beginning. So if somebody's honest with you, you can always give them a solution. If they don't give you the honesty about what they're paying now in their lease to Icon or Xerox or whatever, and then you find it out later because you get invoices, then you go, okay, well, now we've got to deal with something that's a little disparate from what we are used to.
Well, Jim, hey, we wanted to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today. For those folks that are listening today, and I guess they want to talk to you maybe about how you might look at their business or get consulting advice from you or whatever it may be, how can people get in touch with you?
My email address is Jim, P as in Patrick, McCarter, McCarter at gmail.com. And do I dare give up my cell number?
Probably not a good idea on the shrimp
tank. All right. Let's just leave it there then, the email address.
Yeah, I got to tell you something. If you listen to the broadcast today, you got some great nuggets of advice. There's a lot of people that start companies, right? There are some people that grow them, but there's very few that sell and exit in a very profitable way. So we appreciate you taking your time today.
Yeah, and I just got to say thank you publicly too, because one of the things... or is the primary thing that makes our entrepreneurship center great is we are surrounded by the best entrepreneurs in the Southeast. And so to have somebody of your caliber around my students and helping mentor and being part of our board of advisors is something I greatly appreciate.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Well, make sure you'll tune in for the post-show wrap-up. We're going to ask Jim some questions. You'll see a video on YouTube. Check it out in our MailChimp newsletter. And make sure you go to iTunes and download us. And every week, join us from 11:30 to 12:30 right here on the Shrimp Tank. Next week, we're going to bring you Cliff Oxford. Boy, are we going to hear some stories from Cliff. He is with the Oxford sort of Center for Entrepreneurship, some of the best and brightest entrepreneurs. He's helped exit a ton of them. In fact, we saw several weeks ago or several months ago, the woman that sold ThinkThin for $237 million. We're going to hear some great stories next week right here on the Shrimp Tank.
I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win.